Either she homeless or she got problems. That's the only reason why she run to a black man.
I like him already.
Now you wanna get nuts? Come on!
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome.
Producer, director, writer. He is the ultimate filmmaker and bona fide foodie. You're listening to The Quiddituzz Factor with Michael J. Arbouet.
Thank you for coming back. Welcome and hello to another episode of The Quiddituzz Factor. I'm your host, Michael J. Arbouet. But before we get started, what does that word, that strange word, quiddituzz, mean? Adriana, please give them the definition.
Quiddituzz, Latin, the whatness of a thing, the essential nature of something, the quality that makes a thing what it is.
Correct. Quiddituzz is the whatness or essence of a thing or person. And in today's episode, we are going to be interviewing an amazing woman. And that woman is Donna Drake. To call her versatile doesn't even begin to cover who and what she does. Donna Drake is an award-winning creative artist, writer, producer, actor, and influencer. She has created a show called The Donna Drake Show. Before that, it was called Live It Up. She's been a radio host. She travels the world. And her story is very inspiring. It's amazing to me how some people can get knocked down and then just get back up again. And reminds me of a quote that says, the only place where success comes before work is in the dictionary. And that's absolutely true. And Donna certainly works at everything that she does. So sit back, relax, and listen to our conversation with Donna Drake. Donna, thank you for joining us today. I like to start the show always by asking, when you were 8, 9, 10, what did you want to do when you grew up? Can tell us about that.
I wanted to be me, like who I am now, which is rare probably for some people, but I wanted to grow up to be famous. And I wasn't sure if it was going to be singing or if I was going to be in the movies. I told my mother that I was not going to die in Florissant, Missouri, which means Valley of the Flowers, that I was going to grow up and I was going to move to New York or California. And sure enough, that happened. So I've always been on this mission, living my life really fast, in the fast lane, because I wanted to prove something. I was bullied in second grade and I wanted to prove that I was going to grow up to be somebody. And now I kind of feel like I am somebody. And I still, it's cute because I still have all the friends I had when I was a child. And they are some of my biggest ardent supporters. And they tell me, they're like, we're so proud of you. You grew up to be exactly who we thought you'd be. Like, yay, you know, celebration, celebration, celebration. But it didn't feel that way when I was a kid. I thought my nose was too big. I didn't like the space between my teeth. Kids would only call me sometimes if they wanted a ride to go to roller skating, if they knew that my mom would pick everybody up. I was always like the fifth wheel because I was a little different. And now being me and being different is a good thing. But back then, being as vivacious and effervescent and almost like too hot to handle, maybe wasn't so great. But yeah, I wanted to grow up to be who I am now, which is beautiful for me to be able to have the confidence to say that.
Donna, I've known you for quite a while now. Tell me about your college years. That time, those years studying, is that something that helped you on your trajectory to what you wanted to do now?
It was kind of like a patchwork quilt, Michael. I won a beauty competition called North County Junior Miss, and I got a scholarship to a college, but I didn't really want to go to the place where I had gotten a scholarship to. So I was going to study at Mizzou, but then my friend that I was supposed to room with, Kathy, she didn't end up going to Mizzou. She ended up going to Baylor with her boyfriend, who's now, she's been married to him for over 30 years, and I love them both dearly. But then I was too shy to go to Mizzou by myself. So then I went to a local college, University of Missouri, St. Louis, and I was studying communications, but it was boring. And I wanted to maybe delve back into theater or art. And I went to a community college. So I got my degree from St. Louis Community College at Florissant Valley, which they used to call, instead of Flow Valley, they used to call it Slow Valley. And here I was, an A student, and I was at the community college, But I went, and I'm so grateful that I had that experience, because their art program was on par with Parsons and Pratt. We had the very first Macintosh computers. So not only was I able to learn graphic art and design from a technical standpoint back then, but I was able to use the computers. And so I was really at the cutting edge of that art. And having that art background then led to help with getting a job in advertising. And really, if you think about it now, what I do for a living is I am a cheerleader for brands, people, and causes. So the art still comes in handy a lot, you know, because I'm art directing, if you will, the show. So it's interesting that, you know, it's been kind of patchworky, my life, like anybody's life, you know. It's like riding a bike, Michael. You get on the bike and you're going down a street and feel the wind in your hair, and you still have enough wind to go through your hair, Michael. So but for me, riding my blue bike down the street when I was a kid, and you kind of make a left and you're like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I don't want to go in that direction. Maybe I want to go in this direction. I've always kind of been that type of a person, ebbs and flows. And I think I'm still a student of life. So even though I went to college and those are the things I studied, it gave me some skill set. But being an avid learner on this journey, my whole entire existence, I feel like I'm still learning. So yeah, so it wasn't like, oh, I went to Harvard and then that degree gave me connections that allowed me to be something, right? It's that I paid my own way through school. My mom worked at Kmart in order to help me pay for my tuition. You know, I didn't grow up with a silver spoon by any means, middle class upbringing. So that was my journey. I always made good grades, though. I still like making good grades. I'm like, if you're going to do something, do it all the way, or just don't do it at all, you know?
So as I said before, Donna, I've known you for quite a while, but the first time I kind of discovered you, I believe I heard you on the radio. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Now, how did that happen?
So I think you might be referring to WLIR. So I had a Sunday night. Are you talking about that? Sunday night at 6 o'clock?
Yes.
So what I would do is I had both the public access television show with Donna McKenna called Indies Insider, which really was the precursor to my television show now. I never felt pretty enough to be on camera. I just didn't. So I got a call from this guy, Bob Harrison, and Bob Harrison said, public access, they're going to do a talk show and I want you to host it. I said, you mean produce it? He's like, no, I want you to host it with Donna McKenna. And I had to really think about that for a second, because I was comfortable being an actress. I was comfortable playing a role, but could I really be comfortable in my own skin doing this talk show thing? And it turned out that I absolutely loved it. It was crazy. It was like this epiphany of like, like the angels and the harps and the whole nine yards. Right. So, I knew Harlan Friedman at the time, and WLIR was looking for someone to do 6 o'clock Sunday nights. So we would pre-tape the radio show at Dave Goldberg's Digital Waterworks in his basement. And we would also do a radio version of the same show. And then I would take the CD, I'd drive it all the way out to the station, and I would run it up the stairs. I'd hand it to Harlan Friedman, who was working at JVC at the time. I'd be like, okay, here's the show. He's like, okay, great. Sometimes I would barely make it. Barely, just like by the skin of my teeth, barely make it. But that was the radio. And then I've done a lot of voiceover work, you know, like for fitness celebrity John Bastow. You know, call now and you can get two videos for the price of one from fitness celebrity John Bastow. And it was funny because one time I was watching HGTV late at night, falling asleep to that when I guess it was like 2 a.m. and I woke myself up. You know how people walk in their sleep? I was like talking to myself in my sleep because the commercial came on. It woke me up. I sat up in bed and I was like, what the heck? What? And I was like, are you kidding me, Drake? And I fell back asleep. But I laugh about that sometimes. But yeah, I like radio. You know, that's been fun. I did early podcasting before podcast was a podcast with Steve Strangio, Linda Bruno, and Rob Altman. We had a podcast called The After Party. And Newsday even did a huge article about it. I mean, in this, we were trailblazing. We were doing it way before anybody else. So, you know, I guess that's another way that I've been able to use my voice.
Donna, you're one of the strongest people I know. And the reason why I say this is because when I think about you, two different quotes come to mind. The first one's from Zig Ziglar, and that quote is, "Difficult roads always lead to beautiful destinations." And the other quote is from Oprah Winfrey, which is, "Turn your wounds into wisdom." I hope I'm not being too personal here, but can you tell the audience about your paintings and about how you met your husband?
Well, that's a big, long can of worms you just opened up there right now, Michael. So let me step back for a second. So the house portraits I was doing, and I started them early on. I was drawing people's houses for like $35. And then Daniel Gale and all those people would like put it up in their foyer. So I took a booth at the Huntington Festival one year and said I would do portraits for people. And then I used to charge how many windows you had. So if you had a ranch house and it was three windows, it was one price. If you had a two-story with a lot of windows, it was more. Started doing them in pen and ink, started doing them in color. And there was one Christmas, I completely took on too many commissions and I worked right, almost like right through Christmas to the point where I had to give people gift certificates to say that their portrait was going to be delivered in January, February or whatever. So that was my way of making money when I was an early mom here in Long Island. I moved from St. Louis to New York. This was like 94, 95, those years, 96, 97. And it's funny what you said about which Donna Drake, and I do a lot of things because Lynn Dobrin, wonderful journalist, calls me one night and she says, "Oh, I want to do a story on you." She goes, "Oh, I heard of another Donna Drake that does such and such." I said, "Oh, that's me." She goes, "Well, do you know this other Donna Drake that does this or that?" And I was like, "Lynn, that's me." She goes, no. She said, "Really?" I said, "Yes." She goes, "So you act and you do house portraits and you're doing this and that?" And I said, "Yeah, that's all me." She goes, "You're making my mind spin." And we've been friends ever since then. And then my marriage, also a very interesting journey. I have been married three times and I have three children by two different fathers. And I never really intended that. I grew up in the Midwest and thought I was going to be like the housewife and have the cute kids. Well, my kids are really cute, but have cute kids and have that type of a lifestyle. And I met my first husband when I was picking out music and sound effects for an Ozzie Smith movie, Famous Cardinal, Golden Glover. And one of my early jobs in the business was picking out music and sound effects. And so, he came in and said, "Oh, I'm going to work on this project." And I was like, "Oh, he is dreamy, so dreamy." And he was originally from New York. And so we got married and we had our two children. And then he got a job opportunity in New York. So we moved up here with our two kids. Then somewhere around being 28, maybe 29, 30, somewhere in that, I decided I wanted to become single. And we have co-parented those two children beautifully. I'm very proud of them, Andrew and Elise. And like you said, Elise is also an artist. My son works in HR. And so that was my life for a while. And then I became single. I was single for a long time. And I met a man through Match.com. Might have been Love at AOL. Might have been the first one, Love at AOL. Mm-hmm. And our first date was on Christmas. And we were married shortly there. After, I guess the following Christmas, we got married on December 28th, and that was Tom LaScala. And we blended our families together. We took our honeymoon to Disney World, and Tom had colon cancer. And Tom wrote a song, "Life is Only What You Make of It." And so the first part of my television show, now called The Donna Drake Show, and then there's a colon, and then it says Live It Up. But Live It Up was named after the song that Tom LaScala wrote, which was, like I said, Life is Only What You Make of It. And we were very close and he was the love of my life, my soulmate. And I still miss him every day. And, he brought a lot of joy to my life and also helped me find my voice because prior to that, I would be kind of shy and I'm still shy. People don't know that I'm really sometimes an introvert. I guess that's the Gemini in me. And then sometimes I'm an extrovert, but Tom really helped me find my confidence. And we were married and we built a beautiful home together. And then he died of colon cancer. And that was just tremendously painful, really difficult for me. And then I married his friend because people were taking me to movies and wanted me to feel better. And it's interesting because when I was a little girl, I always wanted to have three children. And that gave me, marrying Dan Dunninger gave me the ability to have my son Matthew. So at the age of 40, I tried to have a baby and it worked. So now I have three beautiful children. And I'm currently single. So, and I've been single for a while. So when you said, tell me about how you met your husband, well, there you go. That's my whole life story for all your listeners to enjoy. But I'm really great at blending families. I'm really great at relationships. I'm very good at, you know, the glass being, you know, full, not just full, overflowing, super positive. And I do feel blessed. The men that I have had children with are wonderful men. And my husband, Tom, that I lost was a fabulous man. And, you know, sometimes people have long-term relationships. I just choose to marry my long-term guys. So there could be another husband on the way, you know, time will tell.
The reason why I had you tell this story is because I wanted the audience to get a feel for the type of person that you are. And when you first started your show, it's a type of show that empowers people. And, you know, I know you called the show Live It Up in honor of your late husband, but it really should have been called the Donna Drake Show from the beginning. The show itself has been transformed so many times. And in the beginning, you kind of took a back seat and had other people host the show. Tell me a little bit about that.
You were one of two people that were the very first people, Michael, to come up and tell me, I saw your show and I loved it. And I was like, what? I'll never forget exactly where we were. We were at the Huntington Hilton and you came up to me. It was for some event. And you said, oh, I saw your show and it was wonderful and it was so great and blah, 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 blah. I said, you like my show? You watched my show? I had no clue that people actually like had watched it. And the other gentleman was the gentleman from the Salvation Army, sweet man. And he came up to me and he said, and I said, really? He goes, oh yeah, I love the recipe that you did with Jeanette Barber with the peanut butter and jelly chicken. I was like, oh, you watched the show? that was profound. But yes, yeah, so in the beginning, I had asked my friend Fran Capo to do it with me, and she's in the Guinness Book of World Records, she's the fastest talking female. And I had all these different correspondents, and I still have the correspondence, but it's interesting that you said that you wanted, I guess, more access to me as a person, like you wanted to know more, I guess, about me or engage with my personality or something, because recently someone said, well, Donna, we want to interview you, or we want you to do the Live It Up tips of the day that you put up on Facebook, but we want you to hear them in your voice. We want more access to you. So I'm stepping up and I'm going to do more of that. In September, David Santiago is going to turn the tables on me, and I'm going to let him interview me, and I'm going to, you know, just let people see who I am. And then I got a call the other day too. These things make me laugh, Michael, because I get this call and this gentleman says, I watched your show. I'm completely engaged with your personality. He goes, I run these cruises, and I've run cruises with Florence Henderson, and he was naming off all of these people. He goes, I think we should do a, Donna Drake Show, Live It Up cruise. He goes, and that way all of the fans, you know, would want to spend their vacation dollars with you. And he goes, and I could see, you know, you do this thing called focus, which I do. I do this motivational talk called Figuring Out Your Consistent Unique Strengths. I did a TEDx talk on it. And he goes, and then we could do a live show. And at first I said no, but now after I talked to him for like an hour, I gave it some thought and I think I'm going to do it. I was like, okay. So I appreciate what you just shared with me, and I'm going to work on bringing more of my own self forward during the show. But I'm not as comfortable. Like even doing your talk show, I was so excited because your show's great, so great. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, I want to be a guest on this show. And then I was like, Michael, I'm like, how long is your show? I like to get, and you're like, well, I was like, oh, okay, can I be that real? But I feel comfortable with you, so I'm just answering every question you ask me with my authentic self. I'm like, okay, here we go.
It's true. That's why it's like, I don't know if you noticed this, and maybe now you'll notice this a little bit more. But, you know, when I say, when I tell people what quiditas means, that they get scared of this long Latin word. So I switch it up and I say that quiditas means magic. So what do you think your magic power is?
I think my ability to hold someone's soul in my hands and care for it. Mm-hmm. I think it's my ability to resonate with someone. Like through my eyes, I think I am able to be a safe place for people.
I think that's absolutely true. And the reason why I mentioned this and I asked you what your superpower is because I get the feeling that when people meet you, they just want to be around you all the time. You have this special energy that you just put out and it's infectious.
I believe that that partially came from the fact that my mom died of breast cancer in her 40s when I was pregnant with my first son, and then losing my spouse, Tom, when he was 42. And then a couple of weeks ago, I had a tremendous fall. I thought I was a goner too myself. But I think for me, Michael, it's the matter of waking up every day and making every day count. So I live that day. I cherish that day. And when I sometimes in New York, when I first moved here from St. Louis, people would think that I was fake or phony or flirtatious, right? And then I'd be like, oh, I'm just friendly. This is how people are in the Midwest. You say hello and you, so I think in the beginning too, like, or in my early days, because you have known me for a while, I think I did come off as kind of flirty or flaky, but I'm not. I'm just, this is who I am. This is my, I'm going to choose to be happy every day because I know that it's a choice. It's also a good survival tactic for me. You know, there've been times in my life I've had $1.97 in the bank. There've been times, like I said, that I was widowed. I've been down and out. One time even had to go to Long Island Cares, the Harry Chapin Food Bank one time. You know, there have been times that have been so humbling for me in the journey. And so now I'm like, well, okay, well, I have so much to be grateful for. I have an attitude of gratitude. And I think it just beams right out of me, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I do have a bad day now, I just cry in the shower and then I get over it. I allow myself a little bit of time to be pissed or sad or whatever I'm going through and emote, but I refuse to let it take me down. I refuse, you know, because there's no power in that. The power is in the positivity. The power is in being thankful to your God or to whoever you celebrate in life. And that's where your power is.
So if you listen to the show, I have a series of questions that the audience just loves to get the answers to. And so my first question to you is, what's something that people seem to misunderstand about you?
Well, I think I just kind of blatantly shared it right there, but I think people think that, you know, ooh, how could she be so nice? And I think I'm nice, you know, like, I don't know. So mm-hmm. I think people misunderstand my happiness as being phony. And I get it. Like New York, you're supposed to be a little more cynical than I am. And I don't have that gene, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't have it in my deck of cards. So I think they misunderstand my joyfulness as being insincere when in actuality, it's very sincere.
Tell me about a person that touched your heart and how that person makes you feel or inspired you to be a better person.
So many people, thousands. But I think Elliot Simmons, who was the yes when I went to him at WLNY TV and I wanted to buy time on the channel and have the television show. He went to the management and convinced them to be a yes for me. And that one yes, and there have been a lot of yeses, but that one act of kindness is something that I will always cherish. Mm-hmm. Be in a better position to say yes to others. So I guess that was his grace and his belief in me allowed me to also believe in others.
What's the best compliment you've ever received?
A makeup artist called me PGE. And PGE, he goes, hello, PGE. And I'd be like, hello. And that came from him meaning pretty green eyes. So the nicest compliment is when someone compliments me on my eyeballs. So I think that sounds silly, but, you know, there's a lot of compliments that come my way. Or even today, you know, there's another sweet one too. Like I was listening to my daughter have a business call with someone about an art project that she's doing for Red Bull. And just the way that she was talking to the people and acknowledging them. And then she turned around and she patted me on the back and she goes, Mom, my business acumen comes from you. So that's also a nice compliment. So it could be like physical or it just could be a compliment.
Outside of being a television host, radio host, superwoman, what are you interested in right now?
I want to travel internationally again. You know, I love history. I love my family tree. And I've been researching it a lot over the years. And I'm really looking forward to walking on the same streets of my ancestors. That's something that I really am looking forward to doing again. Just having the freedom. I guess that's what I want. I want the freedom to go anywhere I want 24/7, anywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I miss that. I miss that freedom of being able to, that interests me.
Tell me something that you failed at.
I once failed at getting a job, but I'm kind of glad that I didn't get it. I tried to be the executive director of the Art League on Long Island. And I was down to like the final five and I didn't get that gig. I was also really high up to get the, to join the Directors Guild way back in the day. I took the test, got all the way up to the interview and they asked me if I was afraid of anything. And I said that I was afraid of the dark. And I guess they wanted me to say I'm not afraid of anything. But at the time I was like, sometimes I would, you know, sleep with the light on. And I guess that wasn't the right answer. So I failed at those two things. If I fail, I wouldn't say anything else has really been a failure for me. Everything's either been, you know, a success or a lesson. I failed at knowing what to wear when I was supposed to meet Billy Joel years ago. And I haven't, still to this day, haven't got that interview with him. And there's been 11 times, Michael, that there have been an opportunity, but then I was double booked on something. So far I've been a failure at getting that moment to happen. But that just means it hasn't happened yet. Doesn't mean that it hasn't, it won't happen. But those are, I guess that's it. I guess those things that you think, I definitely want that Billy Joel interview, but the jobs, it's probably good that I didn't get those two jobs because then I wouldn't be doing what it is that I'm doing now. Right? So I need a clone. Can you clone me, Michael? Just so I can go back and get the jobs I didn't get, you know?
What's the biggest challenge you have right now? And how are you going to overcome it?
What challenge? Gosh, this sounds so doggone sappy. I look at challenges as opportunities. That sounds horrible, like to say I don't have any challenges, but I don't. Like my challenges are simple things like, I have to remember to put gas in my car. I've ran out of gas 6 times. So I have to, you know, things like that. Or maybe the challenge of making sure that I pay my light bill on time, that I don't miss a bill. I have challenges with the simple task because my mind is racing with the bigger things. So sometimes to me, the things that might seem little tiny details of dotting an I and crossing a T, they don't get my attention. Because I'm living life at a higher level. And that sometimes could be a problem because if they come and turn your lights off because you didn't pay the bill, not because you couldn't pay the bill, you know, that's not so cool. So I find the day-to-day, I wish I had an assistant that could just be like a little reminder for me. That's a challenge for me. There, that's honest. I get challenged by that type of thing.
Tell me a funny story or memory that you have in your life that you'd like to share with my audience.
Well, people make me laugh. People really make me laugh. And I have a friend that can do crazy things. Like he can wiggle his ears. He can wiggle his nose. He does all kinds of ridiculous things with his face and changes facial structure. And I will laugh for hours just because it's so ridiculous. I like those things make me laugh. Great movies make me laugh. And a funny story. I one time went to an event with like 2 different shoes. Like, so like, you know, when you're getting dressed in the dark and you just like go grab something or whatever. So, and I didn't realize that for hours later that I had 2 different shoes on. My life is pretty hilarious, you know? So I laugh a lot. There's a lot of crazy things that happen. I got it. Just dawned on me. Okay. Do you remember being a teenager and you have Stridex pads? Mm-hmm. They were like, okay, I accidentally fell asleep with a Stridex pad on my forehead. And when I peeled it off, it looked like a baseball had hit me in the head. That to me is a typical Donna Drake. At the time it was Donna Campana. That is a typical gooberish thing. But yeah, that's a funny story that not a lot of people would know, that I fell asleep with a Stridex pad and tried to pass it off as getting hit in the head with a baseball.
What's one common myth about your profession, like, debunk right now?
A common myth about my talk show that mm-hmm. I have, that I'd like to demyth? People think it's easier than it is. I work hard. I work really hard. And I don't fault anybody for wanting to start their own talk show or have their own show. I mean, the more the merrier, right? But I do laugh when they think that a half hour show, that it only takes a half hour to put that together.
Right.
It takes me a week. I mean, it's like a lot that goes into it. You know, the client, the conversation, and it's an art. What I do as a talk show host, it's an art form. And to do it really well, it's a craft. And I work on it all the time. I try to hone my skills. I want to be the best at it because I feel like my audience deserves that. And so I laugh sometimes when people are like, oh yeah, I got a camera and I'm going to now have my own show. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, it's not that easy. But I will be gracious to anybody that calls and wants help or wants some tips or wants some ideas. I'm happy to help them. But I don't really appreciate it when people think that what I do is easy, because it's not easy. It's worth it, but it's not easy.
I just want to be in a testament to that it's not easy, because I remember you went from having a little tiny studio that was like a corner to a huge studio now, and that took years. And I'm just so proud of you for that, because I remember what the Donna, I remember what the Live It Up set used to look like, and I know what the Donna Drake set looks like now. So that to me is just amazing. Yes.
Well, the original set, for your listeners that don't know, it was two director's chairs, and it was a TV monitor with a still Live It Up bumper sticker logo on it. And that was it. That was the set. And we tried to make it look bigger, you know, and we would fake it out. Like, we would try to like look around, like there was like 100 people in the audience and stuff. And it's interesting now, even with COVID, even in the big studio, because I don't have a live studio audience, during the opening, you'll still see me like looking around and smiling. And then I look into the camera, but there's really no one there, right? There's minimal people, like maybe 20 people instead of like the huge big audience that we usually have. But now I direct all my attention into that camera lens, because I want the person at home to know that it's as if they're there with me.
For future generations of your family listening to this, what is some wisdom you'd like to partake on them? What's some advice you'd like to tell them as well as us?
That to be kind to themselves and to not limit themselves. And it's okay if, you know, you do things differently, because that's what makes you you.
If you could turn back time and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell her?
That just made me want to sing. If I could turn back time. That's like a Cher song, right?
Yeah.
I think she's like, da, 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 da. I think I would have told myself that that it doesn't matter whether you own a house or rent a house, that it's just most important to have shelter, to not worry so much about those things. Don't worry about materialistic things. You don't need as much as you think you need.
What's the biggest surprise you've had in the last few months, and why?
The amount of people that want to come on my show. Like, it used to be, we'd call people to say, oh, would you like to be a guest? Would you like to be on the show? And now, Michael, something magical is happening, and the phone is literally ringing off the hook. I get like 2 to 3, sometimes 4 or 5 calls a day saying, oh, how do I learn, you know, how do I want to be a guest on the show? You know, what does it cost? How do you do it? What's the process? Oh, I saw my friend on a show, or, oh, I saw this segment. We want to do our show too. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? Because now the phone people are calling me. And that is the biggest surprise, especially during the challenge that we're having. I don't know if it's because I've I'm known for doing a positive, you know, talk show, and, you know, people really need good news. And I've been doing good news now for over a decade. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what it is, but something beyond me is happening. And that, I'm in awe of that right now. It's just, it feels strange, but it also feels beautiful and wonderful. And I'm thankful. And it's fun. Like, I really love what I do. So when these people call and they're like, oh, I have, you know, this is what I do, or I'm raising money for the veterans, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. How do I get on your show? And I'm like, oh, I'm like, you're perfect. We have a no assholes and no bozos policy. So it's not just like anybody can get on the show. We curate the show. You have to really be doing something good in your community, or you have to be a business that's doing something to help people. But the right kind of people are calling. And it just is, I'm blown away by it. It's just amazing.
Is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't?
Yeah. My zodiac sign and my favorite indulgence.
And what is your zodiac sign?
I'm a Gemini, which I think I did mention earlier, but yes, I'm a Gemini. Mm-hmm. My favorite indulgence, I love caramel, chocolate. I like pecans. So I like turtles. It's like this. And my really favorite was when I was a campfire girl and a Girl Scout. They used to have like these things called katydids, which were turtles that came in a can. You used to take the little key and you'd roll around the whole outside of the can, and then you'd open it up and you'd pop open the freshness. And there was like a little white tray with perforations around the whole edge. And the very second I would take that turtle and I would just put it to my lips, I was in heaven. So that is my favorite. My grandparents sold candy for a living, and I am a chocoholic. And I don't mind claiming that. And that's it. I think that's the only thing. I don't know. Is there anything, any question now that you think that you wanted to ask me that you might have not asked me? Because you can ask me anything. I've never done a more authentic, real, honest, gut interview ever in my life. I just completely was like two friends just hanging out, having a beer. Right?
Yeah, definitely. I love it. My last question for you is, what does the future hold for Donna Drake?
The show is already on a national platform, and I'm looking forward to my son getting married and my daughter spending more quality time with her, and my son Matthew, just watching him and who he's going to grow up to be. So I'm looking forward to my 100th birthday party, which will be June 3rd of 2065. I'm already planning that. So I think the future for me holds the ability to, when I say the sky's the limit, the sky's the limit. So I'm not putting any restraints on myself. I'm going full force, and I'm embracing every breath.
Donna Drake, thank you so much for being on the show. You were a pleasure to have. Before I let you go, can you take us out?
Hey, this is Donna Drake, and you're listening to The Quiditas Factor.
Thank you for listening to The Quiditas Factor. I am Michael J. Arboy. Before I let you guys go, please visit my website at www.mikearboy.com. That's MikeArboet.com. And please check out the Quiditas page and go to my shop and go to Arbor Artifacts and buy a t-shirt that will help keep the show going, as well as my wife's Etsy store. That is Poem Jewelry Design. She makes wonderful jewelry. So if you're looking for something for someone, please check that out. And also, if you want to become a patron, please, by all means, check out my Patreon page. Click on the button on the website and become a patron for like $1 a month or $5 a month. You really help the show going. And I'll give you some secret tips and stuff that didn't end up in the broadcast. Little tidbits of knowledge information that you might like. Please come back next Tuesday for an all-new episode of The Quiditas Factor. Thank you for listening.
Thanks so much for listening to The Quiditas Factor with Michael J. Arboway. We'll catch you next time.